This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about a new way of publishing research on the internet and for free, something unusual, and also balancing science and security. But first, it's a gene therapy trial we've talked about a number of times on the program, where French researchers treated patients with a form of severe combined immunodeficiency disorder, sometimes called the bubble boy disease. You know, that's the one where the person has virtually no immunity to illness. The treatment consisted of giving patients a good copy of the disease-causing gene with the idea that the new gene would produce the protein that their immune systems need to function normally. And the gene therapy seemed successful in nine patients were cured. The researchers said the trial was proof that gene therapy could work. But 3 years after the treatment, two of the patients developed a leukemia-like syndrome, and subsequent studies showed that the gene therapy was to blame. Observers said this shows that gene therapy can have unintended and dangerous side effects. Well, this week, the French researchers reporting in the journal Science say they think they know why two of the patients who received gene therapy went on to develop leukemia. Here to talk about that study and gene therapy is Dr. David Williams, the Beatrice Lampkin Chair of Hematology Oncology and a professor of pediatrics at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and director of the Division of Experimental Hematology at Cincinnati's Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program, Dr. Williams.
Thank you very much for having me.
What is the French researchers' explanation for why two of their patients developed this leukemia-like syndrome?
Well, the two patients that developed the leukemia had in common insertion of the virus vector in a specific gene called LMO2. This gene is not unknown to us that take care of children with oncologic problems or cancer problems, because it's a gene that's found dysregulated in some patients who develop T-cell leukemia, some children that develop T-cell leukemia. So the French investigators, using very sophisticated molecular methods, were able to demonstrate that in these two patients in slightly different locations, but in both cases very close to the regulatory regions of this LMO2 gene, that they identified single copies of the vector inserted in this region.
So then the new gene sort of triggered this nearby cancer-causing gene to turn on?
Yes, so this is a gene, LMO2 is a gene that's actually required for normal development of blood cells and normal development of T lymphocytes in all of us. But it normally, as is the case with many genes, as the cell develops into a full mature cell, this gene generally gets silenced. That is, the mm-hmm. transcription of the gene shuts off. And in the cases of these two children, in their leukemia cells, it's clear that the gene is on inappropriately, and that's coincident with the fact that the vector inserted into the gene area.
Was the gene inserted in the wrong place in all the patients, and these two developed the cancer, or was it they just happened to be in the wrong place in these two patients?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I must say, we don't know the answer to that yet, but I should point out that in this type of gene therapy, using what's called a defective recombinant retrovirus vector, we don't control where the vector inserts itself into the genome. So this is one of the potential, of course, negative side effects of this type of gene therapy. We don't actually direct where the gene goes. Now, it turns out, and this is actually quite still evolving field, it turns out that it's likely that these retroviruses pick certain areas of the genome, and the areas that they appear to pick, although I must add that this is still controversial, they seem to like to seek out areas of the genome that are transcriptionally active, that is, open chromatin areas of the genome. And there's some indication that they may, in fact, prefer the end of the gene where the regulation of the gene is occurring. Hmm. And so in this particular case, in fact, that occurred. Now, what you ask, and I didn't quite answer, was did this occur in all the patients, and we just have two of the patients that have developed leukemia. We don't know the answer to that yet, but I think what's clear is that given the number of virus vectors that these children's stem cells were exposed to, and given the number of cells that were infused into the patients, so this was a large number because these were very small children, infants actually, it's likely, just statistically, that there's integrations that occur in many, next to many genes that are important. So the gist of your question that we don't know the answer to yet is why, in fact, these two patients developed leukemia. Is it by chance that they were the only ones that had insertions next to this important gene, or is there something else about the development of the leukemia that we don't yet understand? And I think we don't know the answer to that yet.
Talking with Dr. David Williams of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, our number 1-800-989-8255. Could there be something serendipitous that might come out of this in that, you know, looking to find the cause of why these children got the cancer, we might discover something about how cancer operates and just sort of be the opposite of what you were looking for?
Oh, I think that that's actually quite possible. I think now, of course, there are lots of teams that are working on understanding this very same scenario in highly sort of controlled and experimental conditions, and they're asking the questions, well, what exactly was the reason why these two children developed the leukemia? That is, if we express the comma gamma chain cDNA, which is the gene that's being replaced, if you will, if we place that experimentally in the LMO2 gene, do we get leukemia every time we do that, for instance, in a mouse?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that that kind of research will likely, in the years to come, tell us the missing links into why this occurred.
If this gene therapy involves basically giving the patients a virus that carries in the new genes, and if I hear you correctly, you're saying that it's really a shotgun approach and you have no control over where the virus winds up or the new genetic material winds up, does this explain why it's taking so long for this kind of therapy to bear fruit?
No, I wouldn't say that. I want to actually also step back for a minute and reiterate what you said in your introductory remarks. I think it's important for people to understand that this disease is a life-threatening disease, and in this study, in spite of these two serious events, and I don't want to diminish the importance of those events, particularly for the families and the children involved, the majority of these patients actually did not only quite well, but were cured of their disease. Now, if we treated, just by history, if we treated the same number of patients with the other methods of treating them, which is a bone marrow transplant, from someone who's not related. So in other words, these children didn't have what we call an HLA-related sibling to donate to them. Then the mortality and morbidity from that transplant actually is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to make sure people understand that we're discussing serious adverse events of gene therapy. But in general, this was a quite successful trial.
Yeah, you had almost 80% success rate
right.
with this.
And so to answer your question, and I'm sorry I diverted the answer for a minute, the problem that we've had in the field translating all the sort of hype of the early 80s on gene therapy into human therapies is that there's been a fundamental problem with the efficiency with which these retroviruses carry genes into human hematopoietic stem cells. So hematopoietic stem cells are the cells in the bone marrow that give rise to all your blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely fascinating stem cells, but they're present in the bone marrow at really small numbers. So for instance, in a city, let's say the size of Indianapolis, Indiana, it's 1 million people, there's about 1 to 10 stem cells or 1 to 10 people that would be stem cells in that whole city.
Hmm.
So the virus approach requires very high efficiency. And we can do that quite well and have done that actually quite well since the early 80s in mice. But when these studies moved on to human studies, there's fundamental differences in how human and mouse hematopoietic stem cells behave, and that's where a large part of our problem has been in making this work in a larger extent than what it has. The interesting thing about this trial, which, as you pointed out, has been successful, is that it was successful in large part because these children have such a need for their T cells to be corrected that their bodies actually select for the cells, the very infrequent cells in which the gene has gone in and turned on correctly.
Huh.
So they sort of self-select, if you will, or their immune system self-selects for those stem cells in which the successful, what we call transduction or transfer of the gene has occurred. So I think I believe, as a person that's been in the field for 20-some years, that it is indeed an example of a disease. This is a trial which shows us, in fact, that gene therapy will work.
Is it ready for prime time yet?
Well, I think it's ready. No, I think it's ready for what people are still doing, which is very careful, controlled studies in which it's clear what we're trying to do in a specific disease, and I think it's done in a way where, as best as we control for these potential side effects. And I think what happens now with this trial having these side effects is that people will now spend time trying to redefine or redesign the vectors to make them safer, as well as to make them effective.
And as you say, this is for kids who have this kind of leukemia. There's not much else you can offer them at this
point?
Well,
this kind of, they have an immune deficiency.
Yeah,
and if they have the way the therapies work, if they have a sibling who has matched them for as far as a bone marrow transplant, that type of transplant works pretty well. But like other diseases, if you don't have a sibling who matches you, and so you do a bone marrow transplant from an unrelated donor who's usually found through a computer search, the technology of bone marrow transplant is evolving very quickly, but that type of transplant is still highly experimental and still has a high degree of morbidity and actually mortality from the procedure itself.
What happened to the two children who...
That's a good question. These two children actually have been treated for their leukemia, and as of the last I've heard, are both in remission, so they're both doing well.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean they would not be candidates again for some other kind of, if there was an improvement on this, or to try it again?
Their immune system is actually functional still.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's functioning, but
yeah.
This was the side effect.
Yeah.
I understand what happened.
Yeah. In fact, I should correct myself. I believe that one of the children has actually now gone on to a bone marrow transplant. So I think that the point is that they're both doing well. And so we have to take into consideration the fact that while, again, I don't want to downplay the seriousness of this side effect, in general, the trial was quite successful.
Mm-hmm.
In a disease that's very, very serious and is life-threatening to these children.
Dr. Williams, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
You're welcome.
Dr. David Williams, the Director of the Division of Experimental Hematology at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center in Ohio. Short break. When we come back, changing gears again, second part of our trifecta, talking about free online medical journal, the Public Library of Science. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.